We take a look at the role asking questions plays in our lives. There are thousands of websites out there devoted to answering any question you can think of. But our next guest says, hold on, we're not really asking the right questions, and that could be a problem.
He says questioning is one of the most powerful forces for igniting change in business, in our daily lives. When done right, questions have the power to change the world around us. To do that, we need, he says, to re-examine what we're asking about and relearn how we approach questions.
Joining us now is Warren Berger. He's a journalist and author, and his new book is called A More Beautiful Question, The Power of Inquiry to Spark Breakthrough Ideas. Warren, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Well, you write that there is a common denominator that runs between some of the biggest success stories in the creative fields, in business, and in life in general, and that is the know-how to ask a brilliant question. Why do you see questions as having so much power?
Well, this came out of research that I was doing, for a previous book that was all about innovators and how they come up with their ideas. And I noticed that one of the common denominators among a lot of people who come up with new ideas or great new inventions is that they're asking questions that other people aren't asking at the time. They're looking at the way something is done in the world, and they're stepping back and saying, wait a minute, why are we doing it this way? And what if we were to try a different approach? And if so, how might we begin to do that? And so that kind of questioning is often the starting point of change and innovation. And I started to sort of play with that idea, and the more I thought about it and the more I looked at it, the more I realized that if you look at a lot of stories of successes in companies that are startups or breakthrough products, technology, a lot of times you can trace it back to an original question that someone was asking, again, that other people weren't asking. They were looking at the world a little differently, and they were questioning it in a way that other people weren't doing.
The kind of questions you're talking about are the kinds of questions that can seem a little bit, I don't know, kind of incendiary to ask because you could look stupid or it could be viewed as a question that you shouldn't be asking. You're being insubordinate. Do we have to ask questions that are kind of dangerous?
Yeah, I think so. I think one of the really powerful things that I discovered is that naive questions can do amazing things. And the reason is that we all tend to make assumptions. You know, we kind of go along on our lives assuming things are a certain way and that they're supposed to be that way and it's kind of unchangeable and that's just the way it is. And what really good questioners understand is that almost everything is changeable, right? And so these assumptions oftentimes are flawed because if you step back and you start to examine some of the ways we're living or the ways we're doing things, if you step back and question it, you start to realize, gee, that may not be the best way. Just because it's the way it's done right now doesn't mean that's the only way to do it. Doesn't mean we can't improve it. So that's where naive questioning comes in into play and is very powerful. Just the being willing to say why. Why are we doing it that way? And, you know, it's true, a lot of people don't like you to do that because people sort of feel like it's stopping progress. You know, you're asking these fundamental questions. Gosh, we dealt with this years ago. Why are you bringing this up? But in reality, that's where a lot of progress comes from, those kinds of questions.
And there's a whole bunch of stories that you tell. And one of the most inspiring is the guy who had his leg amputated below the knee and he got a prosthetic foot and it was terrible. And he thought, why do I have to have this terrible foot? And that was sort of his question. Why isn't there a better foot? Can you tell us what happened after that?
Yeah, his name is Van Phillips. And, you know, he had a water skiing accident. And this is a number of years ago. And so the technology at the time for a prosthetic foot was just so rudimentary. And, you know, at the same time, he was seeing that we were, you know, sending people into outer space with amazing technology. And his question is, you know, why are we able to do these amazing things with technology, and yet someone is walking around on a replacement foot that's made of wood and can't bend or move or do anything? So, you know, he just was saying, why can't we have a better foot? You know, why can't I have a better foot? And that question inspired him to begin to look into the technology himself, learn the engineering of it, and he eventually developed what was known as the flex foot, And it was a curved blade foot that became famous when the runner Oscar Pistorius used this in the Olympics. And it's now being used by athletes all over the place. But it was a prosthetic foot that could actually mimic the way a real foot works and allowing you to run and jump and do all these amazing things. So he, you know, he cycled through asking questions that no one else was asking, and everyone in the field just sort of said, oh, you're crazy, you know, that can't be done. And he just said, he started with why, you know, why don't we have something like this? Then he began to ask, what if, you know, what if we could combine this technology with that technology? How might that work? And then he got to the hard part, which is, you know, what I always find with these questioners that are sort of creating change, the hard question is always how. You know, you sort of have to figure out, okay, I've challenged the realities that exist. I've come up with some ideas, but how do I actually make this thing real? How do I make it work? And, you know, that's pretty tough. He pulled it off, though.
And experts, you know, that he ran into, he kind of ruffled some feathers, didn't he? Because they were the people with answers. He was this guy who didn't really know anything, but he just kept persisting in his questions.
Yeah, well, there's a famous line about how experts, Frank Lloyd Wright said it, you know, experts, they stop questioning because they already know, quote unquote, know. You know, they have the answers already. And so experts, a lot of times, in no matter what field you're talking about, are actually very poor at questioning because their mind just doesn't go in that direction, and they're so invested in the answers that they have that they really don't want you to question them, and they don't necessarily want to question them themselves. So it's an interesting phenomenon in the world, and I think now, I mean, one of the things I say in the book is that we're in a world now of such rapid change that if you're invested in answers, it can be kind of dangerous because the answers are changing so rapidly. And what made sense yesterday may be a little outdated today. It may not make as much sense. So you really have to be willing to question more now. You have to be willing to say, just because I knew something or I know something that was valid yesterday, is this still valid today? Is it still the best way to do it? Or is there a new technology or a new way of doing things that can be added to what I already know?
Now, one thing that you care about is the way that we learn to ask questions. And as children, it seems like kids ask questions all the time. And there's even a statistic on this about the average four-year-old asks some crazy number in the hundreds of questions per day. But then at a certain point, we just stop.
Yeah,
what
we
happens?
Stop. It's very interesting. It's almost like the questions fall off a cliff. When you look at a chart of this, you know, so many questions at age 3, 4, and up to around 5, and then all of a sudden less and less and less, it goes right downhill. I don't think it's a coincidence that this happens as we're entering school. And, you know, I've talked to some research scientists about this and who've studied this, and they have found that, you know, when kids go into the classroom, they suddenly feel a little less safe asking questions. They felt more safe around their parents. They get into a classroom environment with a teacher and other kids. They feel a little less safe. So really what we need to do then is really encourage them to question. But instead, usually our classrooms are doing the opposite. You know, the signal they're giving to kids is, you know, gee, we don't have time. You know, we don't have time for extraneous questions. You know, and a lot of times it's, you know, it's really the teacher who's asking the questions, and the kids are supposed to, you know, just kind of memorize the answers, and that's what they get rewarded for, right? They get rewarded for having the answers. There's no reward, really, for asking a great question. So I think it's an interesting thing that a lot of educators are grappling with right now, and there's a group that I sort of studied when I was working on the book called the Right Question Institute, and they're really based on this idea that, you know, teachers have to set aside time to encourage kids to formulate their own questions, and you sort of have to, you know, give kids permission, give them a little bit of instruction. This is how you put together a good question. And then just let them ask questions, let them play with questions.
Right, because it's a natural thing for kids to do. And you actually checked out some comedians who were thinking about the way that we ask questions the way that children ask questions, in particular in the case of Louis C.K., and we've got one of the clips you write about. Let's take a listen.
Right.
This is my daughter the other day. She's like, Papa, why can't we go outside?
Well, because it's raining.
Why?
Well, water's coming out of the sky.
Why?
Because it was in a cloud.
Why? Well, clouds form when there's vapor. Why? I don't know. I don't know. That's. Oh, I don't know any more things. Those are all the things I know. I'm going to stop here to be polite to you for a second. But this goes on for hours and hours, and it gets so weird and abstract. At the end, it's like, why? Well, because some things are and some things are not. Why? Well, because things that are not can't be.
And a clip there from the comedian Louis C.K. talking about his daughter, peppering him with questions, strings of questions in this case. Would we be better off if we went back to that state of being where we just kept asking why?
Yeah, well, I think it's, you know, what I say in the book is that asking a lot of why questions is very useful. However, there is a point when you do want to sort of start to move forward on questions. I mean, you can get trapped in an endless cycle of whys, as Louis C.K. Points out in that bit. You can end up with questioning your what's going on in the universe and what your role is, and it's like, if you want to move ahead on a problem, you know, whether it's an issue in your life or an issue in your work, I think at some point you want to try to move forward with a question. You're asking why, and then at some point you're starting to ask, okay, what can I do about this now, and how do I begin to make progress? So it's interesting. I think you want to think in terms of questioning as a way of moving forward on a problem.
Well, we're talking right now with Warren Berger about the role questioning plays in our lives and how we can ask better, more beautiful questions. And you can join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Did you ever ask a question that maybe changed your life? What was it? And what do you think can put us in that path to asking better questions? Call at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We're talking with Warren Berger, author of A More Beautiful Question, about the power of questions. And you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. We want to know, what do you think makes a beautiful question? And why do we as adults get scared of asking questions and stop questioning? You can email talk@wpr.org as well. And Warren, let's look at that a little bit. What can we as adults, who are by now sort of set in our ways and probably kind of terrified at being wrong about things, how can we learn to ask better questions?
Well, I think it starts with the way you kind of look at the world around you. I found that people who are good at questioning have this ability to step back. You know, that's the phrase that gets used a lot, is stepping back. And that means kind of stepping back from doing things the same way all the time or from rushing around with your daily life and just taking the time to think about things, taking the time to think about maybe things you're doing, taking the time to think about your job, your family life, and thinking about, you know, how are things working, why are things maybe not working as well as they might, what are some things we might try that might be a little different. So I think that's part of it. Another part of it is, I found in terms of questioning, being willing to sort of challenge the assumptions, you know, that's a really big thing that makes questioning more effective is when you're able to challenge sort of the things you assume in your everyday life or in your work that are you assume things are sort of unchangeable, and you have to sort of open your mind up to the fact that almost anything is changeable if you take the time to sort of think about it and consider other possibilities.
We've got a lot of folks waiting to talk to you, so let's go first to Joe in Harper's Ferry, Iowa. Hey, Joe.
Hello. Say, I'm wondering about your opinion on the concept that every answer creates a new question, maybe two answers creates three questions, and the whole concept of knowledge is a big, deep well with a bell shape.
But yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, what I sort of say in the book is that the process of questioning is kind of endless in a way, because you think that you will, let's say you tackle a big question, right? You start out with a big, important question that you're trying to find the answer to, and you work on it for a long time, and you get to an answer. But the fact is that that answer probably has a lot of new questions within it, because it will probably not be a complete answer in some ways. So you'll come up with some type of a solution to a problem, but then it will create new issues that have to be dealt with, or maybe the answer will only be an answer that lasts for a certain amount of time or covers so much of the problem. And pretty soon you have to be asking, okay, how can we improve upon this answer, or how can we take this to the next level and go further? How can we expand upon this? So I do agree that, you know, within every answer that you find, you're going to find new questions and new challenges, and therefore you have to be very comfortable with questioning. You have to be comfortable with the idea that you'll be questioning pretty much forever. You know, you'll be questioning long after you find what you think is the answer.
Okay, thanks a lot for that call, Joe. Appreciate it. And we move to Janice in Milwaukee. Hi, Janice.
Oh, hello. I just like to call in and comment on about questioning and how comfortable a person may feel with questioning. And I think it goes back to somebody's skills that they have for just interacting with people. And if they don't feel comfortable just talking to somebody about just a general subject, they may not even feel comfortable talking to somebody and asking a question to them, because they don't have maybe the confidence in addressing them correctly or using the correct words, or maybe presenting it to them in a manner that they feel like they're actually going to get a response and be heard.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the biggest issue that people have is they feel that questioning somehow reflects badly on them. That in asking a question, it somehow reflects badly on you in terms of you don't know, or you're lacking information. A lot of people think questioning is a sign of weakness. And of course, the opposite is true. I mean, you know, people who ask questions are some of our most successful, innovative, amazing people, and it's always been that way. I mean, you know, Einstein, a master questioner, right? So the idea that questioning would somehow make you seem less intelligent is kind of crazy when you think about it. But yet, you know, we're sort of conditioned to feel that if you ask questions, well, it's revealing some gap or some lack of knowledge that you have.
Okay, Janice, thanks a lot for that question from you. And I want to ask, so questioning, obviously we're talking about the importance of it, but how do we go from the questioning stage, where we think we've really asked something provocative and meaty and perhaps world-changing, how do we move from that to action?
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the things I found, I was studying that a lot in the book, because, you know, obviously you have these amazing, you know, people who've created great stuff. They're great innovators. They're entrepreneurs. They're very accomplished people. And they start out asking questions, and then you naturally wonder, well, how do they get beyond just asking questions? And what I found with a lot of them is that they're very good at acting on questions. So when they raise a question, they immediately ask themselves, what can I do to start to work on this question? What's the first step that I can take? And I found that, you know, oftentimes what they're doing is, you know, I think I mentioned earlier that there's kind of an interesting cycle where people tend to go from why to what if to how. And I think that bears out in a lot of stories that you look at of people solving a problem. You see that they start out asking why. They start out with a lot of questions where they're trying to figure out, okay, what's going on here? What's the problem? And then they're moving into a stage of questioning where they're starting to come up with ideas. They're starting to use their imagination, right? What if I do this? What if I do that? And then ultimately, if they're going to get somewhere, they have to get to a very practical kind of questioning, which is, I think of it as almost action-oriented. You know, how am I going to do this? What's the first step I'm going to take? Can I make a a rough version of this idea of what I have? Can I write up a report? Can I sketch out something and show it to people? You have to get to that stage where you're kind of acting on your questions and beginning to make them into something tangible.
You write about how we should be moving toward asking beautiful questions. And in researching your book, I wonder, do you have a favorite beautiful question that you came across?
I liked a lot of them in the book. I loved the question that was asked by the daughter of the creator of the Polaroid camera, who, you know, this is in the 1940s, and he's taking a photograph of this 3-year-old girl, and he says to her, "Okay, now we're going to send the film out. It's going to come back in a week, and you'll get to see the picture." And she wanted to know, why do we have to wait for the picture? And it didn't make sense to her. Now, this was a beautiful question because it really challenged all the assumptions of, you know, well, why do we have to send the film out and wait and go through all this? And it got Edwin Land, her father, thinking about this why question, and it eventually got him to invent the Polaroid instant camera, where you didn't have to wait for the picture, and the camera more or less had the dark room, you know, inside the camera. So I love those kinds of, to me, those are beautiful questions, the questions that really challenge everyone's assumptions and that they cause people to sort of suddenly look at the world differently. A beautiful question to me is one that changes, it shifts our perceptions, and we suddenly say, wait a minute, maybe things don't have to be the way they are. Maybe we really can change something or bring about something new here. And to me, those are really beautiful. And I found a lot of great questions, a lot of beautiful questions start with this really great phrase, which I want to share with people, which is the phrase is, how might we? You know, if you start questions with those three words, how might we, it's amazing how you can open up your mind to a lot of possibilities. You know, how might we solve this problem? How might we do a better job of X? How might we try something different with Y?
Just and those are inspiring words. We're going to have to leave it there. Warren, thank you so much for joining us today.
Great, thanks. It was great to be here.
We've been talking to Warren Berger, the author of A More Beautiful Question, The Power of Inquiry to Spark Breakthrough Ideas.